it's that angelic thing. I could easily see where he would have dreamt up this title. How fun is it to have sort of a tailor-made concertino?
You know, it's amazing because James McMillan is one of my all-time favorite living composers. And so when he agreed to write this concerto, I thought, wow, this is probably one of the highlights of my career, you know, just to get someone, you know, who you can work with, you know, and have an organic relationship with this new piece. And it is quite an extraordinary piece, unique, you know, valuable addition to the trumpet repertoire.
Is that something you think that's important to sort of, I mean, back in Vivaldi's time and, you know, Bellini, all these, you know, different concertos, is it important to sort of add to the rep?
Oh, very much so, yeah, because the trumpet, I think right now the trumpet, in fact, is having a real renaissance, because I think composers are realizing the scope that the instrument has. You know, of course, it's very powerful and can compete with a full symphony orchestra, but it also has tremendous subtlety and interesting colors. And, you know, I think it can be used in just, you know, as a serious art instrument. And I think that that's happening more and more. So although we got a bit behind with our repertoire because, you know, the development or the lack of development of the technological side of the instrument, I think now it's all kind of sorted out. Now we've got to catch up. And composers like James McMillan really know how to write for the trumpet. So it's wonderful when this happens.
And I think if folks hear this, it'll sort of become like the Artunian, that it's just so
possibly
wonderful,
yeah.
You know? I mean, it just, yeah. It's infectious, I think.
I think so, yeah. I mean, this particular concerto, although it's brand new and on the disc, you hear the actual world premiere, because we thought we'd keep that because of, you know, the energy you can hear, because it was, you know, the live show, which doesn't happen so much anymore in recordings, but we loved. You do get a sense of... It's rather neoclassical, I have to say. So it starts off like da 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 da, like the Haydn trumpet concerto, but then it goes somewhere completely different. And it's there's nothing else like it.
Did you guys have discussions when he was composing this? I mean, obviously he probably listened to some of your playing and whatnot, but did you guys have very many discussions?
You know what? We didn't. I think he knew so strongly what he wanted to write. When we met up and had lunch quite early on in the process, because, you know, when we knew that he was going to do it, and he'd already written two of the movements, you know, whether or not that was because he was really keen or because he just was like, I'm getting on with this the way I want to do it. But I totally trusted him because, you know, I know his music well, and I thought, well, anything he's got to offer is going to be great. And I think that's a good thing. You know, sometimes you really do need to work with the composer, just because I think, you know, every player is a very different player. And, you know, the way I play the trumpet is completely different from the way the next trumpet soloist might play. But I think he had a good idea of what he wanted from this piece. And the other thing that's extraordinary about it is that it's the second movement. When I first received the music, I didn't really know what to make of it, really, because it was very sparse and just long notes and then high notes and then even higher notes, but just really not very much movement. And then when we did the first rehearsal with the orchestra, it came, you know, it was much greater than the sum of its parts. You know, it really, my hairs was, you know, standing up on my arms, because I was just like, wow, this is why it's so special. And I knew, you know, of course it was James McMillan, so I thought it's got to be good. And then when I heard this at the first rehearsal, I was like, there's nothing else like this for the trumpet. It's so exciting.
That's a great surprise to have.
Yeah, it really was.
You were talking earlier about colors, and I think on here there's such a wonderful solo piece by Toru Takemitsu that I did not know. I'm a big Takemitsu fan. And it's got to be interesting to have just a solo piece.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a fantastic piece. It's obviously unaccompanied trumpet, and it's half of it is muted, and very quiet as well. So it's quite a challenge to record, because obviously you don't want to sort of scare people if they're driving on the motorway or whatever. But it's very subtle, and he really understands the subtleties of the instrument and the fact that it can be a very intimate and introverted instrument. And that is, you know, it's liberating, because the musical ideas are very strong, yet you don't have to be so demonstrative about everything. You know, it's the subtlety is just, it's really quite mesmerizing. And it's called Paths, which is actually the story of a journey around a Japanese garden. And, you know, just as the motive changes very subtly as you go around, it's seeing the garden in a new light or from a new angle. And it really is sort of meditative, I would say. And it's certainly, it's physically, you know, it's demanding to play, but, you know, mentally it's really engaging to play.
It's funny. I listened to this on my iPad and I hadn't read anything. And so when it came to Nobody Knows, I didn't realize actually that this was just you. I mean, I figured the Taika Waititi, I was like, oh, this is so cool. It's so beautiful. But it was funny. I had to go back and go, oh my goodness. I went and listened to it immediately again once I heard that, read that it was you that you'd put on these under different tracks and whatnot. How did you decide to do that?
And I was, you know what? It's so funny that I actually, EMI actually asked the same question when they received it. You know, obviously the sound engineer and I, we knew what was going on. But once they received it, they thought, oh, where did all those other musicians come from? But I just wanted this bait. This very soft bass of very gentle harmonies, just changing very slowly, very subtly, just for the melody to kind of sit on top of, to keep it warm, if you like, you know, so it wasn't too empty, but it just had this kind of sense of space yet gentleness. And so I multi-tracked these very, very quiet muted trumpets underneath, and they're so quiet you can't really hear what instrument it is. You know, it could almost be an organ or a string quartet or something. And there's even a tiny bit of piano in there, which is my debut on the piano for EMI, which was just really like a sort of seasoning, just to add another sound world, if you like.
It was surprising and it was just really delightful.
Oh, that's great. Thanks.
Yeah. It leads in. I thought, unfortunately, I think some people see 21st century or 20th century music and might have apprehensions. So I thought it was really sweet to sort of include this spiritual because the Zimmerman does quote it.
Exactly. That's why. And, you know, obviously the textures are, the Zimmerman is a masterwork. It really is incredible. But it is, you know, it's huge. The orchestra is huge. There's five saxophones in the orchestra, for instance. And it can be, you know, when you first hear it, you think, wow, what was that? And so I just thought it'd be lovely to have a contrast and something very gentle and spacious just before it. You know, this is exactly the same tune that this concerto is based on, you know, because sometimes it's nice to give people an insight, you know, so then you listen to the concerto and you're listening out for that tune. And sometimes that works really well. You know, for instance, in a concert, if you're about to hear a world premiere of a big symphonic work, perhaps, if somebody talks for even 2 minutes before it starts, just to kind of give you some pointers, it makes the whole experience, you know, 100 times more enjoyable. You know, just like having a great guide at a modern art gallery.
Do you remember the first time you heard the Ariatunian concerto?
I must have been quite young, and it was definitely played by a Russian trumpeter. But I remember thinking, wow, this is really fun and it's kind of romantic. You know, it's one of the real staples of our repertoire, but it's a very luscious, romantic piece. So we had lots of fun recording this.
It's funny. I think I probably first heard it in college and never would have guessed it was written by someone in the 1950s.
I know. It's a really kind of nostalgic concerto. But I think it's very evocative. It always, you know, conjures up all sorts of scenes, you know, of you know, action scenes or romantic scenes or whatever. It's, you know, it's very evocative.
It's really a lovely release. And I, you know, when the Bach came out, I said, oh, this is my favorite. And then when, you know, the Haydn and Hummel came out, I said, oh, this is my favorite. Now I'm saying this is my absolute favorite.
Great. Yeah. That's really nice. Well, that's what I'm aiming to do. And also, apart from, you know, obviously I want every album to be interesting and successful and enjoyable for the listener, most importantly, there is a little bit of a sense for me of, like, you know, sort of trying to follow the footsteps of the great Maurice André, who sadly died the weekend, that he covered so much, you know. And obviously he played everything beautifully, but it was more the fact that, like, wow, I didn't, you know, this is possible on the trumpet. Wow, that's amazing. And so I do have a little bit of, like, of that behind, you know, what goes on to each album, you know, because the next one will be very, very different again. And the one after that and the one after that, you know, I've always got 5 CDs up my sleeve, even while I'm recording whichever one I'm recording.
You beat me to the punch. I was actually going to ask about Maurice and in the idea that, you know, we're all quite sad to hear of his passing, and we know he's left this great legacy.
Exactly.
Are there people, is Håkan Hardenberger, or are there people that you would say, gosh, this person really influenced me, I'm so appreciative they've been in my life?
Yeah, I mean, I would, of course, I would definitely say that about Maurice André and Håkan Hardenberger. Those two are the ones that, you know, I discovered from a very young age. So they were my inspirations. Wynton Marsalis is someone else who I adore and I admire greatly as an artist and as a musician. But I didn't know about him as young as I did about Maurice André. So he's definitely someone who's remained close to my musical heart all my life.
I guess I'd end and say there are not very many classical musicians that have been on David Letterman. Can you see any foreseeable return or any other sort of cool talk shows? Can we see you on Conan perhaps in the future or something?
Well, you never know. You never know. I mean, it was a wonderful opportunity, you know, and one where I thought, oh, shall I try and do something, you know, slightly jazzy or something for this such a mainstream audience? And then I thought, no, why should I be embarrassed about, you know, playing a Baroque piece, you know, and actually... We had lots and lots of fun, and he was delightful towards me. So you never know. One day I might be able to go back.
All right. Well, congratulations, and thanks for talking to us today.
Pleasure. Thank you.